Imagine being named CEO of a multi-billion dollar corporation,
Right.
but there's a catch. You don't actually control the budget. You can't fire underperforming departments.
Wow.
Yeah, and half of your operations are run by independent boards who don't answer to you at all. Plus, your actual board of directors, who live completely outside your jurisdiction, they actively hold the power to override your every move.
It sounds like a nightmare scenario.
It totally does, but that isn't a hypothetical thought experiment. That is the daily structural reality of being the mayor of Memphis, Tennessee.
Exactly.
We are so glad you are joining us for this custom-tailored deep dive. We're unpacking a massive, in-depth structural analysis report from June 2026, put together by the American newspaper and the Memphis Times.
Right, and it's a huge document.
It really is. And our mission today is to use Memphis as a masterclass to show you how major American cities actually function, or, fail to function under the hood.
Yeah, and I mean, it completely flips the script on how we usually consume local news.
How so?
Well, usually local politics is treated like a personality contest, right?
Right.
Like who delivered the best zinger at the debate, or who had the most charismatic campaign ad.
Oh, totally. The gossip.
Exactly. But this report treats the city like an institutional map. It maps out the actual wiring underneath the floorboards. You know, who controls the land, who controls the public safety apparatus, and who actually holds the purse strings.
We're moving past the campaign gossip because if you're listening to this and wondering why your own local property taxes keep going up while the roads in your neighborhood seem to be getting worse,
Right.
Memphis shows us exactly where that money leaks out into structural overlap. So, to understand how this works, we first have to look at the blueprint of the government itself and the brutal math of how its leaders are chosen.
Yeah, the math is fascinating.
The report details that Memphis operates on a strong mayor system, which they instituted back in 1968. They swapped out an older commission system for this.
And what's really interesting here is why they made that switch and what it actually means in practice.
Right.
So the old commission system blended legislative and executive power into just a few citywide seats, which structurally just boxed out minority neighborhoods from ever getting real representation.
Ah, I see.
Yeah, so moving to a strong mayor system centralized executive accountability. Today, Mayor Paul Young, who was sworn in back in January 2024, acts as that chief executive.
And that gives him a lot of power on paper, right?
Yes, it means he controls the daily administration, he proposes the budget, and he holds sole contracting authority.
Wow, sole authority.
Yeah, that last piece is a massive lever of power. It means the executive branch controls procurement, service agreements, and capital work without needing constant permission from everyone else.
Right, but a strong mayor still needs a legislative check, which is the city council.
Exactly.
And the structure of this 13-member council is kind of wild. So, 7 members are elected from single-member districts.
Which makes total sense.
Right, 1 representative for 1 specific geographic area. But the other 6 are what the city calls super district members. They essentially divide the city into 2 massive halves, and 3 council members are elected from each half.
Meaning every single voter in Memphis casts a ballot for 4 different council seats.
Yeah, which is just why complicate it like that?
Well, it creates a deliberate friction in how power is built. The single-member districts create intense geographic accountability.
Like local issues.
Right. If your garbage isn't picked up or there's a zoning dispute over a new gas station on your corner, you call that local rep. Their political survival depends entirely on hyper-local grassroots support.
Makes sense.
But a super district candidate has to run across half the entire city. You just cannot knock on that many doors.
No, definitely not.
You have to buy television ads, mailers, billboards. So structurally, the super districts dilute grassroots neighborhood power and heavily advantage candidates with corporate backing, deep pockets, and widespread name recognition.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because the math of getting elected to run this massive, strong mayor system reveals a lot about the illusion of local democracy.
It really does.
Memphis uses nonpartisan plurality elections. And structurally, voter turnout is shockingly low. The report points out that in the 2022 county primary, turnout was just 11%.
11%. That is barely anyone.
And because it's a plurality system in a crowded field, you don't even need a majority of that tiny 11% to win. Mayor Paul Young won the election with just 27.7% of the vote.
Wow. This raises an important question about what a mandate actually is.
Right.
Because the insight here isn't merely that voter turnout is low, it's that this specific electoral structure is actively designed to be captured by highly organized vocal minorities.
How do you mean?
Well, if an organized bloc, say a massive neighborhood association, a powerful union, or a coalition of megachurches, if they can reliably turn out their members, they wield wildly disproportionate sway over the entire city's trajectory.
Leaving the silent majority entirely unrepresented. It's like being named CEO of a massive company, but 72% of the shareholders actually voted for someone else. How do you govern with that mandate?
Well, the voters of Memphis actually recognized this exact structural flaw and tried to fix it.
Oh, they did?
Yeah, they voted to approve ranked choice voting. Mechanically, ranked choice voting eliminates the plurality problem by allowing voters to rank candidates, you know, ensuring that whoever eventually wins has achieved a broad majority consensus.
That sounds like a solid fix.
It is. But the state of Tennessee immediately stepped in and passed a law banning ranked choice voting statewide.
Wait, really?
Yeah. The local reform path was entirely preempted by state intervention.
Because fixing the math changes who holds power.
Exactly.
And because the city lacks the structural power to even choose its own election methods, we hit the next massive roadblock for the mayor. Let's say you win the election. You sit behind the big desk.
Right, you're ready to go.
You quickly realize that your ability to fix the city's most pressing problems hits a wall of regional fragmentation.
Moving from the theory of the mayor's authority to the reality of the region's geography is a really sobering journey.
It totally is. The report highlights a glaring geographical contradiction. Memphis contains the dense urban population, the historical poverty, the rich cultural exports, and the heavy crime pressure.
Right.
But a massive chunk of the metropolitan tax base, the wealthy property values, and the middle-class political leverage sits entirely outside the city limits. It's out in Shelby County suburbs like Germantown and Collierville.
Yeah, and because the tax base fled, the city's power to govern itself was basically shattered and outsourced across a dozen different agencies.
It sounds like a relay race where none of the runners are wearing the same uniform and half of them don't even answer to the same coach.
That is a perfect analogy. Let's look at how that actually operates with public safety, which is usually a voter's number one concern.
Okay.
So the Memphis Police Department patrols a 288 square mile area. They are responsible for roughly 650,000 citizens and millions of visitors.
That's a massive footprint.
Huge. But the police only represent step one of the justice system, the arrest. Once the handcuffs are on, the city's strong mayor completely loses control of the process.
Wait, so who takes over?
The county sheriff, who is a totally separate elected official, controls the jail. Then the district attorney, who is elected by the entire county, including those wealthy suburbs you mentioned, decides whether or not to prosecute.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and county-level judges handle the sentencing.
So if I'm a resident worried about crime, I can't just vote out the mayor to fix it because the mayor doesn't control the DA or the judges.
Exactly. In institutional design, we call these jurisdictional bottlenecks. When an outcome relies on a chain of independent actors, no single institution owns the failure.
So they just point fingers at each other.
Basically, yeah. The police blame the prosecutors blame the judges blame the jail capacity. It creates this huge accountability vacuum.
That is wild.
And this fragmentation bleeds into every sector. I mean, Memphis City Hall doesn't even run its own schools. Yeah, public education is managed by Memphis Shelby County Schools, or MSCS, which is governed by its own separate elected board.
Meaning the very foundation of the city's future workforce development, neighborhood stability, keeping families from moving away, is tied to an education system the mayor and the city council cannot command.
Right. It also fundamentally limits the city's economic engines. You have the Port of Memphis, which generates a $6.25 billion annual economic impact.
That's billion with a B.
Exactly. And the Memphis International Airport is a massive global hub, obviously inextricably tied to FedEx. But those aren't city departments either. They're run by appointed authorities.
Man, the fragmentation is everywhere.
Oh, it gets worse. Massive commercial development is largely handled by joint city-county agencies like ADGE, the Economic Development Growth Engine.
Let's make sure we explain what ADGE actually does because this is where the money moves.
Right, good idea.
ADGE basically hands out corporate tax abatements. So you have a board of unelected appointees granting massive property tax breaks to multi-billion dollar corporations.
Just to incentivize them to build warehouses or offices.
Right. But when those corporations don't pay their full property taxes, the everyday citizens have to make up the difference to fund the roads and the schools.
Schools the city doesn't even control.
Exactly. The structural leakage is immense. When a mayor promises on the campaign trail, to, you know, revitalize the city, they are promising to steer a machine where they only actually control a fraction of the levers.
And because the city doesn't control its own comprehensive tax base or its own school system, they are frequently forced to rely on the state government for funding and authority.
Which brings us to a massive vertical bottleneck, the state of Tennessee. Reading through the 2026 flashpoints in this report, the political collision between the city and the state is just staggering.
It is the defining feature of modern urban politics in the South, and we must view it purely through the lens of structural jurisdiction.
Right, staying totally objective here.
Exactly. You have Memphis serving as a majority Black, Democratic-leaning local arena, but it is physically and legally embedded within Tennessee, which is a Republican-dominated state apparatus.
And we saw this explode in 2026. The state passed a law to put a state-appointed oversight board over the Memphis-Shelby County schools.
Right, essentially taking authority over a $1.7 billion local budget.
Which prompted local MSCS leaders to immediately file lawsuits.
Yeah, the tension is just incredible.
And it didn't stop there. The state passed laws requiring the local district attorney to issue mandatory reports on why task forces were dismissing certain cases, and they authorized the state attorney general to actively audit local prosecutorial decisions.
And don't forget the National Guard issue.
Oh, right. In 2025, a state judge even had to intervene to temporarily block the governor from deploying National Guard troops directly into Memphis neighborhoods.
They also redrew the political map, taking Memphis's historically majority Black congressional district and carving it into three separate districts that lean toward the state's dominant party.
Wait, I need to push back here for a second just to play devil's advocate.
Sure, go ahead.
If the state is overriding the local district attorney, auditing the prosecutors, and taking over a struggling school system with a massive budget, isn't that just a higher level of government stepping in because the local government is failing its citizens?
That's a really fair question.
From the state's perspective, isn't this a necessary rescue mission?
If we connect this to the bigger picture of American constitutional law, that is exactly the argument the state makes, that they have a duty to correct local performance failures.
Right.
Under the U.S. legal system, cities do not possess sovereign power. They only possess delegated power.
So they only have whatever power the state lets them have.
Exactly. The state grants them their charter, and the state retains the constitutional authority to preempt local rules. Mm. But from an institutional design perspective, this creates severe democratic instability.
Because the voters get overridden.
Yes. If local residents vote for a specific approach to criminal justice, and the state immediately preempts that approach, local voters realize their ballot carries very little weight.
So what does this all mean? I guess it's like playing a game where the referee can suddenly change the rules or just take over your pieces if they don't like how you are playing.
That's a great way to look at it.
Yeah.
And that structural override breeds deep civic cynicism. It turns everyday administrative functions, like education funding or criminal justice protocols, into a live, high-stakes battle over autonomy.
Let's bring this down to the street level for a minute. We've mapped out the high-level political chess, you know, the plurality voting, the county overlaps, the state preemption.
Right.
But what does all of this actually look like when you walk out your front door? Because these abstract structural bottlenecks physically manifest in the geography and the wealth of the city itself.
They totally do. The built environment of a city is simply the physical manifestation of its political system. The tax abatements, the jurisdictional splits, they literally pave the roads or leave them crumbling.
Here's where it gets really interesting and, quite frankly, a little heartbreaking.
Yeah.
The report lays out a massive economic paradox. Memphis faces a 24% overall poverty rate and a staggering 38.8% child poverty rate.
Those numbers are tough to hear.
They are. But simultaneously, Memphis is a global logistics titan. FedEx alone claims a $73.8 billion economic impact in the United States, with a massive portion of that flowing directly through the Memphis hub.
And then there's the tourism.
Right. Driven by Graceland, Beale Street, and the city's profound musical heritage, tourism brings in 13.1 million visitors a year, generating $4 billion.
So how does a place with world-famous culture, blues, rock and roll, and a massive global shipping apparatus struggle so profoundly to translate that corporate capital into actual neighborhood wealth?
It's like the wealth is flying overhead in cargo planes or driving straight down the interstate, but it's not sticking to the ground in the neighborhoods.
Exactly.
The report uses this brilliant phrase describing the Public Works Department as the everyday state made visible.
I love that phrase.
Me too. If you have to dodge a massive pothole every day on your way to work, or if your garbage sits on the curb for 2 weeks, you don't care about the logistics hub. That pothole is viewed as the ultimate failure of the government to reach your specific block.
For a resident in a historically neglected neighborhood, a pothole is physical proof of structural disinvestment.
Right, it's personal.
Yes. It signals that the massive economic machine works beautifully for the downtown tourist zones and the airport authorities, but explicitly excludes them. You see these distinct battlegrounds when you analyze the specific neighborhood breakdowns in the report.
Let's do a quick tour of those neighborhoods because the geography tells the whole story here.
Sure.
You have Orange Mound, which is historically profound. It is recognized as the first neighborhood in the entire nation built by and specifically for African Americans.
Right.
The political energy there is fiercely focused on historic pride, preservation, and fighting off displacement from outside developers.
Then you look at Whitehaven, which is geographically in the south of the city. Whitehaven is home to Graceland, which obviously draws global tourists.
Huge tourist draw.
But more importantly for the institutional map, Whitehaven is a crucial base for Black working class and middle class voters.
Mm-hmm.
These voters are demanding basic commercial revitalization.
Like grocery stores and better lighting.
Exactly. Safe retail spaces. They're pushing back against the idea that all capital investment should flow solely into the downtown core.
And downtown and midtown are the epicenters of that intense redevelopment. They have the arts districts, the riverfront investments, the tourism dollars.
But that growth brings heavy structural tension.
Because real estate and logistics growth is a double-edged sword.
Right. Yes, an expanding logistics sector or a downtown tech hub creates a broader tax base. But it also introduces relentless, heavy truck traffic tearing up local roads.
Oh, and the environmental burdens.
Exactly. Skyrocketing rents and deep fears of gentrification. The legacy residents watch billions of dollars of investment pour into their zip code and wonder, is this infrastructure being built to serve me or is it being built to eventually push me out?
Which perfectly explains why the Memphis 3.0 plan became such a flashpoint for civic engagement. Over 15,000 residents pushed for a build up, not out strategy.
And the mechanism behind that rallying cry is crucial. For decades, cities like Memphis tried to grow their tax base by annexing outward into the suburbs, you know, sprawl.
Right.
But sprawling outward is an institutional trap. It forces the city to take on massive new liabilities, laying miles of new sewer pipes, paving new roads, stretching police and fire coverage further out.
And the tax revenue generated from those sprawling suburban developments rarely covers the long-term 30-year maintenance costs of that infrastructure.
Right, so the core of the city rots while the edges siphon off the remaining resources.
Wow. So the 3.0 plan was an attempt by the residents to grab the steering wheel.
Exactly. To stop the endless expansion and legally force the city to focus its investments back into the existing neighborhood cores, repairing the commercial corridors that were left behind, focusing on pedestrian safety, and keeping housing affordable.
It was a demand that the global logistical capital finally serve the people living in the shadows of the airport.
Exactly.
So as we pull these diverse threads together, understanding Memphis isn't just about knowing who the mayor is.
Right, not at all.
It is about understanding this incredibly complex web. You've got city departments trying to fill potholes while bleeding tax revenue. You've got separate county boards running the schools and the jails.
A lot.
It is. You've got state legislatures constantly threatening to rewrite the rules of the game. And you have resilient neighborhoods fighting to preserve their memory and their futures, all pushing against each other in real time.
And the conclusion of the structural report is vital for anyone invested in urban politics.
Yeah.
It argues that the path forward isn't about waiting for a heroic mayor to magically arrive and fix everything.
Because they just can't.
Right. The institutional design simply doesn't allow for a single hero. The bottlenecks are too severe.
So true reform has to be structural.
Yes. It looks like the city council building up its own independent policy analysts so they aren't completely outmatched by the executive branch's data.
Better data dashboards too, right?
Exactly. Highly transparent financial dashboards so the public can track exactly which corporations are getting tax abatements from unelected boards.
That would be huge.
It also requires building solid, binding regional compacts between the city, the county, and the school systems to tackle overlapping issues like youth violence and public transit.
And a unified state-local bargaining strategy.
Yes. A city like Memphis has to negotiate with the state capital as the indispensable economic engine of its region, rather than just waiting defensively to be preempted.
It is about fixing the machine itself, not just swapping out the driver.
Absolutely.
Think about your own city or town. When you drive over a pothole, or read about a failing school, or see a new high-rise going up, who actually made the decision that allowed that to happen?
That's the real question.
Is your local government actually in control, or is there a hidden web of power you've never noticed before? Next time you see a local headline, ask yourself, who holds the purse strings?
Such a good takeaway.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the world around you.